This paper has been slightly modified to optimize your listening experience. While we have included a brief description of the figures and tables, all references, citations, parentheses, appendices, footnotes and endnotes have been removed. To obtain these tables, figures, appendices, full references and citations for this paper, please view the PDF version at the Canadian Journal of Learning and Technology website, www.cjlt.ca. The copyright for this article belongs to the authors and is openly released under a Creative Commons Attribution 4.0 international license. The title of this article is Safe and Responsible Internet Use in a Connected World, Promoting Cyber Wellness.
Utilisation sécuritaire et responsable de l'Internet dans un monde connecté, promouvoir le cyber-bien-être.
The authors of this article are Kathy Lewin, Manchester Metropolitan University, UK, Dale Niederhauser, West Virginia University, USA, Quinn Johnson, Université Laval, Canada, Toshinori Saito, Sisa University, Japan, Akira Sakamoto, Achinamazu University, Japan, and Roger Sherman, Cambodia Foundation for Higher Education, USA. Abstract. Cyber wellness concerns positive well-being in online spaces, including awareness of how to behave appropriately and protect oneself. In this paper, the complex nature of cyber wellness, focusing on four key aspects, is explained and illustrated. Firstly, developing students' information and media literacy skills is essential for promoting cyber well-being. Such skills are also required for supporting democratic participation. Secondly, the threats and challenges to young people's cyber well-being are identified and discussed, arguing for the need to develop digital resilience. Thirdly, the role of policy at macro, meso, and micro levels are discussed and how policy and educational practitioners can promote cyber wellness awareness, knowledge and strategies. This paper provides a review of the limited scholarship on cyber wellness education and highlights the need to address this gap in the future. This article concludes with consideration of the issues faced and opportunities for overcoming these issues. It is imperative that further work is undertaken on the conceptualization of cyber wellness and that consensus is developed. There are issues relating to the continual rapid development of technologies and their uses. It is important to develop a shared understanding of the mutual relationship between technology and humans. Finally, there is a lack of guidance and good practice exemplars for cyber wellness education. Keywords: cyber wellness, digital citizenship, young people, digital resilience.
Résumé. Le cyber-bien-être concerne le bien-être dans les espaces virtuels, y compris la conscience de la façon de se comporter de manière appropriée et de se protéger. Nous expliquons et illustrons la nature complexe du cyber-bien-être en nous concentrant sur quatre aspects clés. Tout d'abord, le développement des compétences des élèves en matière d'information et de médias est essentiel pour promouvoir le cyber-bien-être. Ces compétences sont également nécessaires pour soutenir la participation démocratique. Deuxièmement, nous identifions et discutons les menaces et les défis qui pèsent sur le cyber-bien-être des jeunes, en plaidant pour la nécessité de développer la résilience numérique. Troisièmement, nous discutons du rôle des politiques au niveau macro, méso et micro et de la manière dont les politiques et les praticiens de l'éducation peuvent promouvoir la sensibilisation, les connaissances et les stratégies en matière de cyber-bien-être. Par la suite, nous passons en revue les quelques études qui ont porté sur l'éducation au bien-être numérique et soulignons la nécessité de combler cette lacune à l'avenir. Nous concluons l'article en examinant les problèmes rencontrés et les possibilités de les surmonter. Il est impératif que des travaux supplémentaires soient entrepris sur la conceptualisation du cyber-bien-être et qu'un consensus se dégage. Il existe des problèmes liés au développement rapide et continu des technologies et de leurs utilisations. Il est important de développer une compréhension commune de la relation mutuelle entre la technologie et les humains. Enfin, il y a un manque d'éléments guides et d'exemples de bonnes pratiques pour l'éducation au cyber-bien-être. Mots-clés, cyber-bien-être, citoyenneté numérique, jeunes, résilience numérique.
Introduction. Cyber wellness may be defined as the positive well-being of internet users and a healthy cyber culture for the internet community. Cyber wellness involves an understanding of online behavior and keen awareness of how to inform and protect oneself in cyberspace. It concerns identity, safe and responsible use, and managing online relationships. Cyber wellness focuses on helping students become responsible digital learners and citizens and having positive experiences online. Given the broad reach of the World Wide Web and the access to children that it provides, information and media literacy and awareness of the potential dangers inherent in participating in that environment has become increasingly important. Ensuring that young people develop a deep understanding of the importance to take responsibility for their online safety and developing skills to critically assess online information will be essential for improving cyber wellness moving forward. There is a need for freedom to socialize virtually, obtain information as required, and to freely engage in political processes. It also requires a degree of cyber etiquette, responsibility, and civility in the virtual public sphere. Searson et al. Define global or digital citizenship as a person who develops the skills and knowledge to use the internet effectively and other digital technology, especially in order to participate responsibly in social and civic activities. Searson continues by adding digital communication and collaboration, etiquette, health and welfare, and respecting rights and acting responsibly as components of global digital citizenship. This definition offers a good starting point, but one challenge may be reaching consensus on a definition of effectively and responsibly. In this paper, we consider four key aspects that shape the development of cyber well-being. Firstly, we argue that it is essential to develop students' information and media literacy skills and consider the role of this in supporting democratic participation. Secondly, we consider the range of potential threats to young people that they face in online encounters, arguing for the need to develop digital resilience. Thirdly, we discuss the role of policy and how it can promote cyber wellness awareness, knowledge, and strategies. Finally, we review the limited scholarship in cyber wellness education and highlight the need to address this gap in the future. We conclude the article with consideration of the issues faced and opportunities for overcoming these. Cyber well-being requires development of information and media literacy. Information literacy and media literacy have increased in importance since the turn of the century given increasing access to the internet. However, most young people have not yet developed advanced information literacy skills that enable them to judge whether or not information obtained online is reliable. Furthermore, there are digital divide concerns attributable to differences in national adoption of technology, socioeconomic status of students, and individuals' level of use. Fake news, echo chambers, and political manipulation all provide a challenge to information literacy. Thus, students can present work based on misinformation and propaganda. It is essential to develop students' information and media literacy skills, such as critical thinking, in school contexts. Thus, teachers must have appropriate knowledge of these skills and how best to teach them. Although some national policies mandate this approach, for example in Singapore, there can still be huge variation in students' experiences and skill levels across different schools. Furthermore, students may have different levels of expertise. Girls had higher levels of information literacy skills than boys in a recent study in Singapore, and students without home access to the internet had lower levels than those with access. Social media is a place of ambiguity, being both a public sphere embracing free discourse and a closed community amplifying homogeneous opinion. This starting point frames our discussion of how to enable young people to be able to recognize both the possibilities and risks that can arise. For example, Jang and Kim argue that media literacy education could provide an alternative to media regulation to help individuals determine the reliability and validity of information on the internet. Laser et al. Point out that combining structural solutions to avoid exposure of individuals to fake news and empowering individuals to evaluate the fake news through media literacy education may be our best strategy to address the challenge. It is argued that media literacy education should facilitate young people's democratic participation. Fang and Schaefer assert that media literacy education must address not only creative production but also critical consumption. Mihalidis and Viotti argue that critical media literacy is essential to ensure media consumers do not develop partisan attitudes and mutual distrust. Adult guidance in critical media literacy is key to engaging young people in more diverse communication and fostering political participation. Widespread social isolation and shelter-in-place policies brought about by the COVID-19 global pandemic have highlighted ordinary citizens' increasing reliance on digital media as their primary source of information. However, the validity and veracity of information conveyed through digital media has become increasingly suspect, lacking any semblance of the journalistic integrity that was espoused by traditional news media. The internet has enabled everyone to disseminate information to massive audiences without thought of the validity, veracity, or meaning in the original context. This provides a myriad of opportunities for those who want to use the media to their advantage by stirring up public anxiety and hostility. Responsibility for determining the validity and integrity of information has shifted to the information consumer. Unfortunately, this shift has resulted in a relativistic stance prevailing among such consumers, which asserts truth is merely subjective. As Lewandowski et al. Argue, humans are experiencing a post-truth world where conventional criteria of evidence, internal consistency, and fact seeking have been abandoned in exchange for finding the reality that each person wants to see in the media. In such a world, when deciding on the correctness of information from the media, information consumers must become wary of the danger of basing their decision on similar information from the same kind of favorable media. Otherwise, it will be difficult for the consumers to push themselves out of their comfort zone and consider information that does not accord directly with their own views. Helping young people feel safe in the digital world. Threats to young people's cyberwellness can occur when they purposefully or inadvertently access or post inappropriate information, or when others target young people. Livingstone et al., Markin Ratliff, and Cohen Almager identified risks encountered by children, including receiving sexual messages, online contact with strangers, face-to-face meetings with such strangers, harmful content, misuse of personal data, cyberbullying, and suicide related to cyberbullying. These threats are summarized in figures 1 and 2, both in relation to their activities online and by being targeted by online predators. Levels of awareness of these dangers are commonly investigated. For example, Edwards et al. Focused on young children's perception of the internet. The authors claim that, since children of this age are now able to go online at home without parental support, they are susceptible to dangers ranging from responding inadvertently to inducements for online or in-app purchases to experiencing inappropriate content or engaging in contact with unknown people. It is argued that young children are not able to contextualize or conceive of these dangers. In contrast, participants aged 8-18 showed a medium-high level of awareness of the dangers of the internet. The importance of children's awareness for fostering greater cyber safety has implied a need for new education programs congruent with the rapid evolution of contemporary childhood experiences. These programs should include children in preschool contexts, as this group is least aware of the dangers of the internet. In addition, given the vulnerability of such young children, it is imperative to ensure that parents can also be supported to educate their children. For example, in the UK, many schools and organizations provide guidance for parents of early years children. Figure 1. Threats to child cyberwellness as agent. Figure 1 illustrates some of the dangers that a child may encounter in cyberspace. The anxiety caused by widespread media exposure to online dangers has often led governments to adopt hasty solutions that end up trying to control young children rather than to guide them. Such attitudes may lead to practices of overblocking through internet filters, implying a culture that is reactive rather than proactive. One could draw a parallel between this kind of censorship and the act of over-scaffolding or over-scripting, which may reduce natural interaction and induce passive learning in literacy education. Reactive, top-down approaches may become problematic when state actors or decision-makers respond exclusively to demands from their constituency or voter base. States themselves can become cyber threats to groups or individuals who are not perceived to be supporters or members of one's constituency. For example, members of minority groups may face discrimination or human rights abuse by means of social media tools. In the case of the Rohingya crisis in Myanmar, it was state actors and state media who perpetuated messages of hate toward the Rohingya ethnic minority through Facebook. In this case, the availability of a social media platform facilitated forced exodus and genocide. Ultimately, online racism and discrimination not only harm children psychologically but also worsen their quality of life and the quality of life of their family within a society. Figure 2. Threats to child cyberwellness as target. Figure 2 illustrates some of the dangers that a child may encounter from cyberspace. In developing cyberwellness strategies to raise awareness of cyber threats, we must consider the competing political interests and the role of the media in the digital sphere, acknowledge children as agents and citizens in our society, and strike a fine balance between techno-optimism and techno-paranoia. Edwards et al. Proposed that educators should seek to understand and build on what children already know about the internet. In their assessment of Estonian e-safety programs, Lawrence et al. Assert that schools need to move beyond technical regulation-based solutions to more explicit comprehensive training. For example, teaching a child how to change his or her security settings, or what to do when one sees someone being cyberbullied. Beyond considerations for e-safety policies, more concrete practices have been proposed. One notable intervention presented a simulated social networking site profile containing risky or dangerous indicators. Students answered questions pertaining to the simulated profile and compared it to their own SNS profiles. Thurlow proposes the use of specific websites designed for education. The Learning Portal is just one example of the many websites that teach digital literacy and explain how to behave safely and responsibly on the internet. Similarly, DQ World, a collaboration between Singapore, Korea, and the US, provides resources for children aged 8-12 targeting 8 digital citizenship skills which include management of privacy, cyberbullying, cybersecurity, and online identity. The Five Rights Foundation has led several projects in which children investigate issues related to cyber safety and participate in defining their rights in the digital age. Inclusive strategies are also promoted by Audit et al., who decree that students, informed of their right to digital education, should formulate questions and engage in transformative dialogue. In this way, student participation is a good solution to solve a dizzying array of problems related to cyber wellness. There is also a growing interest in the development of digital resilience to counter threats to cyber wellness such as cyberbullying. The Cyberbullying Research Center defines digital resilience as positive attitudes and actions in the face of interpersonal adversity online. A study of 1,205 young people aged between 12 and 17 in the U.S. suggests that students with higher levels of resilience were less likely to report that they had been bullied at school or online. A Dutch study of college students trained teachers to deliver a digital resilience curriculum, specifically targeting issues of grooming and radicalization. The authors concluded that the project increased students' sense of responsibility for their actions online, as well as their self-reported knowledge on a range of topics that are critical to safe and resilient use of the internet. During the COVID-19 pandemic in 2020, there has been a growth in abusive and violence-related messages shared through social media, increasing the prevalence of such threats to cyber well-being for young people through exposure as well as targeted approaches. Considering what we have touched on, three pertinent and timely strategies could be: 1. To help students identify problems and dangers that affect them. 2. To support students in creating and designing their digital sphere. And 3. To develop their digital resilience, promoting cyber wellness through policies at a macro, meso, micro level. In this section, we provided a nuanced perspective of how policy development can provide support for cyber wellness. Cyber wellness is a facet of cyber or digital citizenship, within the larger frame of a global socio-critical perspective or within the context of culture, politics, and civil society. In 2016, a United Nations Department of Public Information convention was held in Korea. The outcome of this convention was an initiative titled A Global Day of Education, which emphasized education, learning, and literacy as a means of supporting global development, peace, and democratic practice. This initiative is in keeping with the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals, especially SDG 4, which emphasizes quality education for all, and historically with Article 19 of the 1948 United Nations Declaration of Human Rights, attempting to place cyber wellness and digital citizenship within a larger global and cosmopolitan context is an attempt to situate these constructs in a matrix of intersecting and potentially conflicting variables. Searson et al. Raise a salient point regarding the degree to which the development of cyber wellness and cyber citizenship is limited by national state identity. This begs the question of whether cyber wellness, as a component of digital citizenship, should be subsumed under the umbrella of civil rights or human rights. Furthermore, does the constituent power to develop substantive policies addressing cyber wellness and cyber citizenship lie within the domain of a new international cosmopolitan order or reside within sovereign locati on bounded states? At a meso level of analysis, each of us develops a personal understanding of the world and our place within it. Given the multitude of social and cultural contexts around the world, there is no common standard for appropriate and rational behavior in the virtual public sphere. Each of us uses multiple ideological surround models to craft our understanding of the world and our place within it. Advocates of different isms may lack a common standard of evaluation that enables them to agree with us as to what is appropriate and rational behavior in the virtual public sphere. The task is to move beyond this postmodern relativistic stance and towards a common and agreed ethos of cyber wellness and digital citizenship. Furthermore, the open nature of the internet does not allow for control over the information that is posted. So disparate worldviews are bound to come against each other. The question is, how do we move beyond this relativistic frame to a common and agreed global ethos of cyberwellness and digital citizenship? Since we cannot control information on the internet, the development of globally acceptable cyberwellness norms will need to focus on the user, with self-restraint replacing external constraints. This leads us to a view of cyberwellness that is teachable and navigates the channel between relativism and the human right to seek, receive, and impart information in a self-monitored and civil virtual public sphere. At the micro level, our task is to educate students so that they can safely and equitably participate in online communities, and that this participation is viewed as essential to a student's development in our global society. There is considerable literature that advises us on how and what to teach students in a way that fosters cyberwellness and a healthy sense of digital citizenship. The technical and educational tools are already available in virtual schooling programs whereby classrooms from opposite sides of our globe can have an opportunity to develop relationships, viewpoints, and conversations in a virtual safe place. The task for policy development is to provide sustainability and capacity to ensure that a virtual global educational process is integrated as part of a student's ongoing educational experience. To summarize, the first issue to be addressed under policy can be stated simply: should cyberwellness as a component of digital citizenship be subsumed under the umbrella of civil rights or human rights? And secondarily, does the constituent power to develop the substantive policies addressing cyberwellness and cybercitizenship lie within the domain of a new international cosmopolitan order or sovereign located on bounded states? The second or meso-level issue or challenge in creating a policy for cyberwellness must address how to develop an agreed policy of cyberwellness that is teachable and navigates the channel between relativism and the human right to seek, receive, and impart information in a self-monitored and civil virtual public sphere. The third challenge for policy development is to provide sustainability and capacity to ensure that a virtual global educational process is integrated as part of a student's ongoing educational experience. Developing cyberwellness through teaching and learning. Cyberwellness education is being provided in the world, but, unexpectedly, there is little research on innovative practices and their effects. Such empirical research has been conducted mainly in the fields of global digital citizenship education through online international communication and the prevention of cyberbullying. Very limited research can be found in other fields. One reason for the scarcity of empirical research might be that the innovative practices that researchers are interested in are rare in the field of cyberwellness or digital citizenship. Another possible reason is the difficulty of evaluating appropriate behavior. Either way, it is essential that more evaluation research on the practice of cyberwellness or digital citizenship teaching is conducted, and the findings are shared. It will be important to identify what students know about these issues through surveys and interviews. In addition, innovative practices should be identified and evaluated through observations of practice and eliciting the perceptions of all stakeholders. The limited research that has been conducted in this area addressed issues like growing students' global digital citizenship through online international communication. For example, Larson et al. Found that sixth graders in the USA and Ireland developed heightened levels of global awareness and diverse perspectives through their activities in an online literature circle. In addition, Faville et al. Reported on high school students' uses of a carbon footprint calculator followed by discussing the results of each country through online international communication, and consequently found that there was a shift of focus between local and global perspectives. Engel et al. Conducted 4 case studies of U.S. districts' approaches to global citizenship education illustrating innovative practices such as partnering with schools abroad and concluded that provision is diverse at local levels. Finally, Truong White and McLean explored the use of digital storytelling in middle and high schools to support global citizenship education. They found that it enhanced student reflection and engagement but did not reach far enough in relation to dealing with controversial issues and determining the underlying causes and impact of global problems. Secondly, there are many studies on cyberbullying in which the effects of interventions designed to address this are evaluated. Hudson et al. Conducted a systematic review of such studies and found decreasing effects on cyberbullying and cybervictimization were shown for 9 and 10 prevention programs out of 17, respectively. No Trap and the VISC Social Competence Program were interventions shown to have long-lasting effects on both cyberbullying and cybervictimization. No Trap focuses on encouraging young people to support and defend victims, partly drawing on a peer-led model of instruction. The VISC Social Competence Program is a complex initiative which includes teacher training, meetings with parents, takes place over 1 year, and targets both teachers and students. Gradinger et al. Were unable to determine the mechanism for change in their study due to this complexity. Thirdly, Matsuda et al. Developed three-dimensional virtual reality materials which provided students with analytical problems and feedback according to their ability to understand cyber-ethical codes. However, the use of technology to support cyber-wellness through teaching and learning is unexpectedly rare, a surprising finding when technology continues to evolve and pervade our daily lives. Issues and opportunities. To promote and develop cyber-wellness, we need to look beyond schooling to consider informal as well as formal learning contexts. We need to be aware of the multiple stakeholders involved, from teachers and parents to community members and commercial technology providers. A key aim should be to instill a healthy skepticism in our youth and ensure that they are proactive in protecting themselves. Young people need to be empowered through the development of resilient attitudes and skills, through experience, risk-taking, and failure. Thus, protecting children from the dangers of the internet by filtering information, we argue, will not allow them to develop the skills they will need to protect themselves. Attention needs to be paid to ensuring that all members of our society are equipped to deal with threats to cyber wellness and make the most of opportunities. However, differences in the awareness and interest in cyber wellness have already been highlighted. Students in Singapore without home access to the internet were less concerned about issues of privacy and cyberbullying than those with access. Interestingly, there were gender differences with females expressing greater concern than males. We propose that there are three sets of issues that need to be considered in order to promote cyber wellness and ensure that young people are equipped to deal with any challenges they face in online encounters. Our first concern relates to the conceptualization of cyber wellness. The focus is on cyber wellness when it should be on wellness more broadly. Cyber wellness is a component of wellness. We need to develop a more sophisticated, nuanced, and conceptualized understanding of cyber wellness and its elements or characteristics together with its link to wellness. We need to convince others of the importance and value of the idea of overall wellness. Secondly, we suggest that technology development poses some challenges. Rather than being focused on the cyber well-being of the learner, the role of technology in education systems is often driven by outside forces. Furthermore, developments in technology are presenting threats to maintaining cyber wellness. The challenges arising from these socio-technical trends need to be addressed. Thirdly, there are issues that relate to cyber wellness education. We lack guidance, training, and tools for practitioners that are grounded in theory. Current school curricula internationally do not effectively integrate well-being. The focus tends to be on setting limits and regulation, rather than focusing on a strength-based approach that encompasses balanced skill building towards empathy, compassion, self-regulation, self-awareness, community awareness, and support structures. More broadly, we need diverse, flexible, and sustainable practices to support the development of cyber wellness across learning environments within social contexts in a civil society. We need to take account of different levels of experience of information literacy and develop a deeper understanding of differences according to factors such as gender and socioeconomic status. Cyber wellness educators would be better equipped to ensure that all young people benefit from programs designed to develop information literacy, digital citizenship skills and digital resilience, irrespective of their background, access to resources and prior experiences. We have identified the following opportunities for addressing the issues identified above. A consensus on a concise definition of wellness and cyber wellness needs to be developed. There needs to be an increased awareness of the fact that cyber wellness is part of overall wellness. In relation to technology, we need to create an understanding of the mutual relationship between technology and humans. We are shaping the technologies that we use, and the technologies that we use are shaping us and the way that we live our lives in a digital society. Moreover, we need to establish an ongoing cycle of evaluation of the technologies that we use. We also need to promote self-awareness of how we learn and are influenced by technology. The development of a community of stakeholders for discussing and determining the proper use of technology would also be beneficial. To develop cyber wellness education, stakeholders should be encouraged to integrate wellness across curricula. A balance needs to be created between learning opportunities and use of protocols in cyber wellness education. It is important to encourage educators to take more responsibility for developing these practices. Educators have the expertise and knowledge required to develop effective practices for cyber wellness education. In addition, young people should be more involved in designing and conducting research and informing policy and practice in this field. Finally, a few thoughts about the challenges presented to policy development and, more importantly, to implementation by the intersect in our postmodern society of radical individualism and the age of authenticity. Most noticeable since the 1960s, civil society has been faced by an obsession with being true to oneself, being authentic. The seeking of authenticity and sincerity has for some been criticized as leading to a corrosion of all forms of collective authority. Radical individualism can be seen in the refusal to wear masks, socially isolate, or even believe there is a pandemic. Epistemology asks us to think about the social conditions that create our knowledge foundations. If society is adhering to the ideological surround model of authenticity and radical individualism, how do we as educators gain support and inculcate in our students the collective sense of responsibility that is necessary for civility, toleration, and an equitable version of digital citizenship? Cyberwellness is an issue that has become incredibly complex in a very short period of time, so blind spots are unavoidable. Arguably, it has become increasingly important during the pandemic due to young people's increased online activity, and well-being has been brought to the fore in challenging times. However, there remains a need to index rigorously the entirety of cyber issues and their possible solutions so that interlocutors can easily reference and improve pertinent ideas. Furthermore, better channels of communication must be forged so that the transformative dialogue of cyberwellness negotiation is preserved. Authors: Kathy Lewin is Professor of Education in the Education and Social Research Institute at Manchester Metropolitan University, United Kingdom. She conducts research on digital pedagogy in compulsory education, and young people's uses of technology to support formal and informal learning. Dale Niederhauser, West Virginia University, USA, has served as president of the EIST Special Interest Group for Teacher Educators and in leadership roles in the American Educational Research Association and the EDU Summit. He has taught coursework and conducted research on learning technologies at West Virginia University, Iowa State University, and the University of Utah. Quinn Johnson completed his master's degree in educational technology at Université Laval. He currently works as a pedagogical counselor at St. Lawrence College in Quebec City, Canada. He has taught English in Canada, Korea, and Japan. His research interests include the right to digital education, open educational resources, computer-assisted language learning, and technopedagogy. Toshinori Saito is an associate professor of education and computing at Tsinghua University, Japan. As a strong advocate of digital equity and agency, he is an active member of TC3 in IFIP and has been involved in academic research regarding computing education for children and adults in non-formal education areas. Akira Sakamoto is vice president and professor of Ochinomizu University located in Tokyo, which is the oldest women's university in Japan. He has been teaching social psychology and conducting research on the psychological impact of electric media use for over 30 years. Roger Sherman is the director of research for the Cambodian Foundation for Higher Education, USA, currently focusing on the intersect between trauma and education. He is also on the faculty of Simmons College, Graduate School of Social Services, Boston, Massachusetts. His research interests include globalization, immigration, trauma, mental health and education, alongside virtual learning. This work is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial CC by NC 4.0 International License. This is the end of the article. The full text of this article is available at the Canadian Journal of Learning and Technology website, www.cjlt.ca.